So what I'm going to talk about is QCD at small chemical potential, and what I will be really interested in is the phase transition between the hadron gas and the coagulant plasma phase, and look at the critical temperature you can get as a function of chemical potential. So why am I interested in this? There's many people here I don't need to convince, but let me go through that anyway. Well, to understand some very important physical systems like neutron stars or avian collision experiments, we need to have a better grasp of the phase diagram at non-zero chemical potential and temperature. We need to understand QCD better in these extreme conditions. If I look at neutron stars, for instance, they look at the part of the phase diagram that is low temperature and high baryon chemical potential. However, if I look at heavier in collision experiments, they look at a very different region of the phase diagram, which is low chemical potential and high temperature. Okay? So what I'll be interested in today is really this regime, this part of the phase diagram. And in fact, if you look at RIC, for instance, you have not only non-zero baryon chemical potential, but also isospin and strangeness chemical potential. For instance, at RIC, the strangeness chemical potential is about 30% of the baryon chemical potential. It's smaller than the baryon chemical potential, but probably not negligible compared to it. Anyway, if we want to understand what happens in this physical systems better, we need to have a better grasp on the phase diagram of QCD in these conditions. So what are the two methods people have used theoretically?
Just one question, as somebody who knows very little about this. So the kinds of questions that they would need to answer to study neutron stars or RIC type things, are those the types of questions that can actually be answered in the labs?
No, I'll come to that. Okay. So that's, I'm going to cover that. Maybe if somebody is able to solve it, but at this precise moment, nobody's been able to do that. But I'll come to that. So people have used different models to look at the phase diagram, and I cite three popular ones, and many people here have contributed to that. So there's the Nambu-Yonalasinio random matrix theory and Lado QCD, which the three of them have looked at non-zero temperature and chemical potential and see what features of the phase diagram you can get when you do that. When you construct these models, basically you do some assumptions. You say these features of QCD are important, the other ones are not, and let me draw conclusions from this kind of assumption. So there's always a risk there, even though these three different models make different assumptions, but there's always a risk that what you throw away might be important and you didn't realize that. So that's why the other approach that people have used a lot is to go on the lattice and to do all the non-perturbative stuff explicitly. And if you look at zero chemical potential, lattice turned out to be the most important tool we have. If you look at any paper today that's citing the critical temperature at zero chemical potential between the hadron phase and the coagulant plasma phase, you find the lattice number cited. None of this previous model that had been built is ever cited anymore, because this was really the most important tool and the final say, if you want, on this critical temperature. So lattice was extraordinarily important at zero chemical potential. Now, at non-zero baryon chemical potential, the usual approach, the Monte Carlo simulation, they cannot be used, because if I look at the partition function, the Fermion determinant becomes complex, and usual methods cannot be used. Okay, so nobody has been able to solve this problem yet, but other people in this room actually have found tricks if you want to circumvent the problem. The drawback they have is that they can never go to very, very high chemical potential. So, as you were asking, it's going to be very, very difficult with this method to reach these colossal supercomputing phases or neutron stars a chemical potential. Okay, so these methods basically are limited to the high temperature, low baryon chemical potential part of the phase diagram. It's nice because it's avian collision physics, so that's already giving us important information about the system that we are studying today. The different approaches that have been used to circumvent the problem, I said two of them. That's imaginary chemical potential with Philippe, Maria, Owe have looked at that. And basically, that trick is making the Fermion determinant real and positive again, so you can use Monte Carlo techniques again. And at the end of the day, you do an analytic continuation towards the real chemical potential. And another one that's been developed by the Bielefeld-Swansea group is to look at the Taylor expansion of, say, the pressure. So you calculate the pressure as a Taylor expansion in the chemical potential, and the coefficient of the Taylor expansion are just calculated at zero chemical potential, so you can use the usual method at mu equal to zero. And again, the problem is that you cannot go to chemical potential that are too high. Okay. There is one exceptional case, and Don has worked a lot on that. Kim as well, Misha as well. So many people have looked at it. Is zero baryon chemical potential and non-zero isospin chemical potential, because in this case, again, the fermion determinant is positive, so you can use all the methods you know how to use at zero chemical potential. And there you can really span the phase diagram as far as you can with your computer power that you have. So there's no limitation in small chemical potential in this case. So you can go, basically, the phase diagram in this case is better known than in the physically more interesting case, unfortunately. Okay. So let's look at what people have found in the lattice using this novel method to circumvent the sign problem. First, what I'm going to look at is the critical temperature between the hadronic phase and the quark and plasma phase as a function of the chemical potential for the up quark and the down quark. Okay, I'll limit myself to two flavors. The critical temperature found on the lattice at zero chemical potential is about 175 MeV, and it's a crossover because the quark masses are non-zero. If I look at results from the Bielefeld-Swansea group, but other people like Owe and Philip have similar results, if I look at the critical temperature as function of baryon chemical potential, mu U equals mu D, I find that the critical temperature is a parabola that has a small curvature. So why is it a parabola? Why does it depend on mu squared? It's because of Cp. If you look at the partition function, when you flip the U and D baryon chemical potential at the same time, you change their signs, the partition function doesn't change because of Cp. That is reflected in the critical temperature. It depends not linearly on mu, but quadratically. Okay. So that's what they find using this method, small curvature, parabola. If I look at mu equals minus mu d, so isospin case, where I can use either the Taylor expansion again or just the normal Monte Carlo methods, for instance, I find again something very similar. A parabola with a small curvature, again mu squared because of Cp, that doesn't change. And the coefficient here, the curvature is not very different from the curvature at non-zero baryon chemical potential. And there's agreement between the Taylor expansion and the usual Monte Carlo methods on that curvature. So what you find, which is surprising, is that the critical temperature as a function of baryon chemical potential is about the same as the critical temperature as a function of isospin chemical potential. A priori, this is surprising because physics at non-zero baryon chemical potential or isospin chemical potential is quite different, right? So I would like to understand that. Why is that so? Finally, all these different lattice simulations find that there is a critical endpoint, that is this crossover here becomes a first order phase transition at some point when you increase the chemical potential and you have a critical endpoint. So let me sketch what the phase diagram looks like. On the left here, what you have is the phase diagram as a function of baryon chemical potential and temperature, and here on the right, isospin chemical potential and temperature. At low temperature, things are very different. In the baryon chemical potential case, you have here a first order phase transition, the liquid gas nuclear phase transition, first order ends up in a critical endpoint, and if you increase the chemical potential some more, you enter into the one of these Kolar superconducting phases. I won't detail what they are, just there's Kolar superconducting phases here. And that comes about by the building of a Fermi sphere and interaction of the quarks that are on the Fermi sphere, the Fermi surface. In the isospin case, at low temperature, things are very different. From the hadronic phase, you leave it when you increase the isospin chemical potential to a superfluid phase. And what happens there is that the lightest particle in the spectrum are the pions, right? Because they are the goldstones. They carry isospin, they are bosons. So when you increase the isospin chemical potential to the pion mass, you're going to have just a standard Bose-Einstein condensation that's going to happen, just like if you look in Landau-Lifshitz. This is second order and becomes first order when you increase the chemical potential. So the low temperature is very different in isospin and baryon chemical potential. The high temperature is very similar. You have a crossover with small curvature, as we just saw in the lattice. There's a critical endpoint here. Here, there may be a critical endpoint or not. We don't know. Don has to work some more on that. And for the rest, you know, this part here and this part, that looks pretty similar. And rig physics is over here. So maybe this can help us to understand that.
Is your figure from isospin chemical potential, is that to scale? Is the tricritical point really so much lower than the crossover temperature?
What? Which one do you mean? This one here?
Yeah, is that really...
This temperature here?
The tricritical point.
This one here.
Yeah, is that really only half of T?
Yeah, if we take the number we calculated in KPT, it's about there.
And from the simulations?
Done. From the simulations, what do you find for the tricritical point?
The tricritical point? I would guess that it exists and actually exists on the other side.
Here? Yeah, it's possible. I don't really know where it is. So let me rephrase that differently. What I was referring to with Kim is we'd done Kim, Jacques Verbeschot, and myself a calculation in KPT where this tricritical point would be. We get some expression that depends on the parent mass. And it's about here if I plug in numbers just stupidly and what the expression we have. However, on the lattice, Don and John Kogut have looked at what's happening at fixed mu and you increase temperature and you look at this phase transition and you find that it's first, second order, and then becomes first order. It's true that the tricritical point they find is more here because they usually find directly to QGP. So I don't really know where the tricritical point is, but that's not what I really want to talk about, okay? It's just a feature that is there and its location is, again, KPT can say something, but it's really at the limit where it can go. The last judge on the position of this will be the lattice. So there's good agreement between different lattice simulations, actually very good agreement also with different models. The models I've cited, also KPT that can be used basically in this region here, there's very good agreement. With one caveat, the critical endpoint. I took this figure from Misha, and here he did this nice job of plotting where the critical endpoint is found in the different theories. So you are in green here, 2 points from two different lattice simulations, and in black, different models where the critical point is that ends up this crossover from the hadronic phase to the Coquelin plasma phase. So everybody seems to find one, but the agreement is really not good, right? So there's really a problem here about the location of the critical endpoint, and any indication we could get about, you know, constraint on that the position of the critical endpoint would be good. Do you remember what HB stands for?
There was this called this method hadronic bootstrap.
Yeah.
What is that? Hadronic bootstrap. You are too young to know.
Eric, you old enough to know?
I'm also too young to know.
Yeah, it is.
Really going back to the old bootstrap.
Yeah, this is 60s. Of course, it is
60s. What is the bootstrap?
It's a model for the equation of state, which includes resonances in a way that satisfies some constraints, which are called
as dualities. So you exchange region here and region on this side, and it has the key, where it means an amplitude. And
so
you use this model.
If you use this equation of state,
okay, so what I want to do today is to try to understand these four properties, the position of the critical temperature at zero chemical potential, the small curvature, that TC mu I and TC mu b are about the same in the critical endpoint, using two kind of minimal models. So basically I want to look at TC as a function of mu u and mu d in different models. And what I want to do is two simple things. One is to use the hadron gas model, and the other one is to use the 1 over NC expansion. The hadron gas model is just a semi-classical model, completely naive of an ideal gas, okay? But it happens that it describes very well the hadronic phase, and that's been looked at experimentally or on the lattice, and it gives a good description. So we'll see what we can do with this hadron gas model to calculate the critical temperature and see what we get. The second approach I'm going to use is the 1 over NC expansion, which is basically just a small parameter expansion. Okay, when you use Stoff's coupling, you have all the nice features of QCD that stays. And what you get actually is you divide all the diagrams that contribute, say, to the pressure into subsets. And these subsets have some properties, which gives you a relation between different observables. And what I'm going to use is this relation between different observables to draw some conclusions. No, I'll come to that. So let me start with the hadron gas model. So, yeah. What I'm going to do is just very simple-minded, take all the hadrons as stable particles up to 2 GeV, and just calculate the pressure due to a particle of mass m of one of these hadrons. And the pressure you get, the contribution from one of these particles, is just this classical expression that you find in any textbook. The temperatures of interest I'm going to look at are going to be below 200 MeV, basically, because the lattice tells me temperature is critical temperature is 175 MeV, so I don't need to go higher than that. And it happens that this gives a good description of the hadronic phase of the equation of state, for instance, experimentally and on the lattice. So let me try to give you some heuristic reasons why that works, okay? Because a priori it's a little surprising that you just look at non-interacting gas and it works. So first, since we are in temperature about lower than 200 MeV, except for the pion, which I'll come back in a minute, the contribution to all of these heavy hadrons is just exponentially suppressed, right?
Here works means that it produces a good equation of state?
Yeah. And Maria has looked at up till 0.95 TC, right? It works very well.
Yes, well, actually, we don't check the prefactor. We just check the functional form.
Right.
And the capacity is so called the prefactor, I don't really know.
Okay.
Is the equation state really measured that well in the lattice below TC?
I trust Maria to do a good job.
Well, but with the kind that I just told you, we can check fairly well with less factors, so dependence and the capacity.
Fritjof has also looked at it, and it also does a good job. I mean, what I mean is that different people using different methods find that it does a good job at describing the equation of state. So first, since the contribution of each hadron is exponentially suppressed, that's why the semi-classical approximation is going to work. Second, the interaction is even more suppressed, and that's why the free gas approximation is going to work. Now, you could question my 2 points here using the pions. And of course, the pions at 140 MeV are lighter than this temperature here, so these two arguments shouldn't go through. However, they do if you compare with a full-fledged calculation with pions, which you can do in chiral perturbation theory. And here, if you compare there, what you find is that the leading order contribution in chi-pt is just this. And then if you compute the corrections due to the interaction, you find they are small, up to 200 MeV. Just by small, I mean the difference between this and the two loops or even three loops calculation is maybe 5, maximum 10% in the pressure, for instance.
And on the lattice, there aren't any pions. They're all heavier.
Right, so I'll come back again to that. So what Fritjof has done is to look at hadron gas by shifting all the masses to what he thinks is hadronic masses are on the lattice and compare there. Okay, I don't do that, I just use the physical ones, but that's a good point. So the thing is that in chi-pt, or for Goldstone bosons in general, their interaction is very weak, right? Because there are Goldstone bosons, they interact weakly, and that's why the corrections to the interaction are small. And that's basically why I can use just the leading order chi-pt, and that's doing a good enough job for me. I don't need to go higher.
What about Romes and about other methods?
They're all there.
They're all there.
Yeah. So everyone up to 2 GeV.
Do you distinguish rho and 2 pi separately?
I just look at rho as being a stable particle. So sure, I make some approximations that are not valid in reality, but doing that basically seems to work.
I mean, the worry is your first argument that heavy particles are heavier, so they don't contribute, is counterweighted by the fact that there's hugely many of them. I mean,
that's correct.
You know,
but
that's the whole story, right?
That, I agree, but each of them independently.
We don't know which is important. I mean, if the entropy is increasing faster than this exponential suppression or not, and it's an assumption you're making.
Right, I agree. What I'm saying is that if I use this and I compare experimentally on the lattice, it seems to work. Now I'm just trying to understand, you know, heuristically, why is it working? But you're right, it's tantamount to looking at problems like you say, and this is saying which one dominates over the other one. That's correct.
The sum over n is gotten from the particle data pump. You just put in everything
that
exists below the
Yeah.
You put everything, rho, rho prime,
everything that is considered as being good, as a real particle that's been observed. I don't remember how many that is.
The usual criterion is that the width of the resonance should be small compared to the temperature.
Oh, width should be small.
Yeah.
So rho is not about 2G.
No, rho is still okay for 115. So
rho, I thought width, rho is actually more than
two. I included the rho, that's what I did.
So rho is always included.
So let me look at how do I determine the critical temperature in the hadron gas model. How do I do that? Well, I'm going to use two different criteria. First, I look at the quark anti-quark condensate, which if the quarks, U and D quarks, are massless, should vanish in the quark-gluon plasma phase and be very large in the hadronic phase. Well, quark masses are non-zero, so it's going to be very small in the quark-gluon plasma phase compared to the hadronic phase, so I'll still be able to use that. How do I compute the condensate from the pressure is by taking the derivative of the pressure with respect to the quark masses. In my case, what I need to know is actually the derivative of the hadron mass with respect to the quark masses. And if I know that, I'll be able to calculate Q bar Q in the hadron gas model. And that, I don't know, but I can go to the lattice where people have used different quark masses and looked at how the hadron masses are changing when I change the quark masses. And these people have found, basically, that it goes like Q bar Q, the quark anti-quark condensate, zero temperature chemical potential, parent decay constant squared, the mass of the hadron, and this constant here is between 1.8 and 2.4. That's what they're able to find. It's basically in good agreement with the BAG model.
On the lattice, the Q bar Q condensate has got some 1/a quadratic divergence, or
that disaster
stuff, right?
Yeah, so what I... You can include the quark mass in front of it. I don't care about this. What I mean is if I look at, you want to look at M Q bar Q? That's fine. I can look at M Q bar Q. I don't mind.
One of the on a lattice, it's dominated by a quadratic divergence, which isn't physics.
But you mean to get this relation here? Oh, what they do is exactly this. What they look at is actually the change of the hadron mass with respect to the pion mass. And what I did is an extra step, I used Galvan-Oxenberg relation to translate that as the dependence on the hadron mass on the quark masses. So I just did this extra step from the lattice where they really use the pion mass as their benchmark that they vary, and I went to the quark mass by using Galvan-Oxenberg relation.
But I'm trying to understand, sine is positive here, Q bar Q here is positive, negative.
Positive.
Positive.
What is the M?
M is the hadron mass.
Which hadron?
The one I'm looking at, like you take the pion, take the proton, say, that's dmp, dmq equals blah, blah, blah over mq.
And this range A?
1.8 to 2.4 is what they find on the lattice when they do their fit.
For different
hadron mass, and I think it's idealized for the rho or something like that.
Is this relation in agreement with low energy theorems? Because I can calculate this precisely and exactly.
For the pions? For instance?
Because it's just low energy theorem. You write down energy momentum terms that are the G mu nu squared.
This is in agreement with the BAG model.
What?
With the BAG model. It's basically in agreement with the BAG model. This.
I'm asking about precise low energy QCD because there is a theorem which tells you exactly what number is supposed to be.
So I didn't look at that.
But since A is arbitrary here, it's probably okay.
No, they say 1.8.
Well, for the pion, that should be A should be a number which is
because you know the way
for the pion doesn't work.
Is low energy.
For the pion is not that's not right for the pion.
Why is it not right?
Because for
it's too low. It's too low. It should be like 3 or 4. I forgot.
No, the the A doesn't fall at this interval.
Yeah, that's for the pi and it doesn't work.
Itself will work, dependent on the mass.
Yeah. So as you can see, there are some problems by doing that. There's some caveats as using Q bar Q as my benchmark to determine the critical temperature. So that's why I'm going to use another one.
And for the nucleon, is it the same? I think it's called sigma term.
Exactly. It's exactly
That's for the sigma term is fine. It's close to that. That's correct.
Can you calculate sigma term?
So essentially, what you do.
You can calculate it on the lattice, and that's exactly what they do basically when they vary. Or using low energy theory. Oh,
I reduce the problem to this part. So essentially, it's reduced to the calculations of vacuum expectation value, Q bar is different.
Right.
And you can extract this information from experiment.
Yes.
But you reduce just using low energy.
Right. So what I can tell you is that for the nucleon, for instance, it works because the relations you can extract, for instance, looking at that in chiral perturbation theory, which is the sigma term in chiral perturbation theory, is in pretty good agreement with the lattice, which is this. So for the sigma term, for instance, it works. So let me use another quantity, which people have also looked at on the lattice and found that when it reaches this value, when the energy density reaches this value, basically you leave the hedonic phase and you get into the quark and plasma phase. Intuitively, you can understand that in the sense that if you put one GeV in a small box of one cubic Fermi, basically you're going to explode all the hadrons, right? You're going to blow them up. You cannot resist such a huge energy there. And what people have found is that taking different quark masses, for instance, you always find that you reach the critical temperature when the energy density reaches this range over here, okay? So what I'm going to do is compute Q bar Q and the energy density in the hadron gas model and see whatever critical temperature I get. Here? Well, in some sense, you can look at it in this way. When you go higher in the spectrum, basically chiral symmetry is restored, right? Chiral symmetry is restored. Different hadrons doesn't appear in the high part of the spectrum, right? So when you go higher in mass, you see that the Q bar Q is less and less contributed to.
It also works for the pion.
Yeah. So let's look at the critical temperature I find at zero chemical potential. If I use Q bar Q as my criterion, I find 185 MeV. If I use the energy density, I will find 176 MeV. This uncertainty is because I don't know this constant very well. And this uncertainty is because I don't know what value I reach for the energy density very well. So altogether, I would say I get about 180 MeV for the critical temperature in the hadron gas model. Compare that to the lattice at 175 MeV, and I'm surprised, it's a very good agreement.
So is it possible you have this enormous uncertainty in the critical energy density and you end up with an estimate of the critical temperature?
That's what you get.
Because
it's t to the fourth, so yeah. If you think that's the error I would quote as, you know, being, I'm sure it's 5 MeV, no, I won't believe that because, you know, I'm very wide in the range I'm choosing, but that's what you get. That's what you get. Even with the big uncertainty also in the hadron mass dependence with respect to the quark masses, that's also what you get. Yes, Eric?
I understand this energy, 1 GeV Fermi cubic. Approximately what it is for, it is a GeV square, right, in this state. Vacuum energy.
Mm-hmm.
And does it correspond to correct value for the vacuum expectation value for the pion condensate, which we know from completely different side?
Oh, I don't know that. I would have to look at that. I don't know. But again, you know, the range I'm giving here is pretty wide. No, I understand what you mean. I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question.
The rate of product expansion.
That's right.
People use for
many numbers, they don't all agree.
One and zero to minus two.
No,
I'm talking about alpha S.
Over here, the question?
This lattice is ultimately very coarse. What people expect 20%.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm just quoting the error they give, and I, you know.
Sure, but if the
50% error, systematic error is correct, then in the continuum it won't agree anymore at least now.
Maybe. I don't know. I cannot take the continuum limit on the lattice, can you?
And the other thing is that it might easily be a level 20% for these equations. That is that we have a normalization of the
time phase. I agree. So what I find is that the critical temperature at zero chemical potential agrees pretty well with the lattice in the hadron gas model. So let me move to non-zero chemical potential. So here I'm plotting when mu equals mu d, the critical temperature as a function of chemical potential. And I normalized it with the critical temperature at zero chemical potential. So in the dark gray band, that's the result you get from using the energy density as your criterion. And the light gray band, everything is gray here. On my slide, it's blue, but OK. The light gray band here with the dashed boundaries, it's what you get when you use Q bar Q as your criterion. So again, you see they agree pretty well between the two. There might be caveats in both of them, but I think they're independent. And the fact that they agree is maybe a good indication something nice is happening. And when you look at the critical temperature here, when you fit what you get here, you get a small curvature and a parabola, again, because of CP. And the curvature is small and very close to the one that people have obtained on the lattice, for instance, the Biel-Feldsonsi group here. And this is the blue here, or what should be blue, is the lattice result here. Okay. So you see the agreement is pretty good between the hadron gas model and the lattice result. Also, when I look at non-zero chemical potential. And another fact is that, as Norm was asking before, what they found is that when you reduce the quark mass, the curvature becomes steeper. Okay, so they're still a little heavy, so maybe they'll get to exactly this. I don't know. I just have no idea. But just to say that these are done for quarks that are a little too heavy, and that should the correction should go in the right direction. I don't know, I would have to think about it. I don't think so, but I would have to think about it. So now let's look baryon chemical potential versus isospin chemical potential. So in the hadron gas model, again, you do the same calculation. This is the mu equals minus mu d. That's the isospin chemical potential. That's the critical temperature. When you use the energy density as your criterion, you find this little curve here. And Q bar Q is this one here. So the agreement is not that good. But actually, the way I presented it here is the worst possible way I can present it to you because I normalized here. But if you look, actually, the difference between these two is only a few percent away. Okay, so on this plot, it's dramatically enhanced. But in fact, the difference is not very big. So if you put them together, you find, again, a parabola with a small curvature, 0.3. This large uncertainty is because they are all over the place, basically, the two here. And it's not so far from the lattice. Well, you look at the curvature, it seems to be far. But if you look on the plot, again, it's just a few percent difference. And that's for the lattice result here. So if I compare everybody together, this is here. So in orange, I have the hadron gas model. This little band here is mu b. This light orange with the dashed line here is mu I in the hadron gas model. In blue, this one here is the result for mu b, and this one there is the result for mu I. And as you can see, they're basically all on top of each other. Again, this is about a few percent difference between each other, right? So what I find is that in the hadron gas model, I also have that the critical temperature as a function of baryon chemical potential and isospin chemical potential are very close to each other. So what, to summarize the result I got in the hadron gas model, I find the critical temperature to be about 180 MeV at zero chemical potential. You find that the critical temperature is a parabola with a small curvature, both baryon and isospin chemical potential, and they're about the same. So that's the third property. The last property I wanted to talk about is the critical endpoint. But as Don was asking at the very beginning, in the hadron gas model, you have no access to the type of phase transition you are facing. So basically, what I determine the critical temperature is just when I reach some limiting value of quark condensate or the energy density, and that was how I determined the critical temperature. But I have no idea if it's a crossover, first order, second order, or whatever kind of phase transition. So I cannot say anything on that. But for the first three parts, it's a pretty good quantitative agreement between the hadron gas model and the lattice results, which is pretty remarkable.
But for me, I'm surprised by your last statement, because in fact, once you have calculated the critical line with your technique, so you have an equation for the critical line, then by using the hadron resonance gas model, you can fix the temperature, and you can calculate the chiral condensate as a function of chemical potential.
Yeah.
So you know the value of the order parameter or the critical value of the chemical potential at a fixed temperature. So you can decide at least if transition is first or second order.
Oh, you would like to do it like this?
Yes.
Okay, that's right. You could do something like that. The problem being that you'd have to fix to give yourself a criterion to say this I believe is first order, this I believe is not. In the sense that when you get, let's say, at the critical temperature you're talking about, it's a drop by, I don't know, 5% of Q bar Q. I mean, I wouldn't call that a first order. But then if it dropped by 50%, we'd say, okay.
Okay, let's say you can calculate the spin of that point for each piece of
the... I understand your point, yeah.
You can see the mismatch between spin of that point and critical point.
I understand.
Zero, it's second order and first.
That's right. I could do something like that.
A simple question. Did you calculate the fourth order correction? Just because the second order correction has such a small coefficient,
It goes further. Yeah, it's a small coefficient as well.
So the fourth order coefficient is also small.
Yeah. There's nothing bad with this the series expansion when you look at the curvature there. So let me go to try to understand these properties using the 1 over NC expansion. So as I said at the beginning, what it does is giving you different sets of diagrams in the 1 over NC expansion that distinguishes classes of different phase diagrams that give you some relations between different observables. And that's worked pretty well for hadron phenomenology, for instance, when you look at masses in a different multiplet or between different multiplets and so on and so forth. What people have been able to find is that if you give me the mass, say, of one hadron, and I can find some relation between this mass and another mass in the multiplet or in another multiplet, using the 1 over NC expansion, you get a pretty good idea of what that mass should be. And after people have done experiments, they found very often that that was right. So what I want to do is to look at the 1 over NC expansion at non-zero chemical potential and temperature. So let me look at the pressure. The pressure starts at NC squared. And the diagrams that contribute to the pressure are planar diagrams that contain only gluons. The next leading order, NC, is coming from diagrams that contain one quark on the outside and planar gluons on the inside. And that's order NC. And then there's higher order correction that I won't look at. So let me calculate the critical temperature in 1 over NC expansion. What I want to look at is the specific heat. I know that when I reach the crossover, for instance, or another first order or second order phase transition, the specific heat is going to have a peak there. So I'm just looking for the maximum of the specific heat when I vary the temperature. Now, the specific heat is just given by basically the energy density. The energy density is basically given by the pressure. So the specific heat has to start as NC squared. The planar diagrams containing only gluon contribute to that coefficient. And there's a 1 over NC factor in front of the contribution with this quark line on the outside of these diagrams. So that means if you calculate this using that, the critical temperature as a function of different number of colors, number of flavors, and as a measure you take NC into infinity or Young-Mills with NC equals to 2, whatever you want, should go like this. 1 coming from here, 1 over NC coming from the quark. This diagram is the quark on the outside. And then there's 1 over NC squared correction to that. Does that work? Well, Lucini, Tepper, and Wenger have looked at the critical temperature in pure Yang meals when you change number of colors. They have looked at 2, 3, 4, 6, and 8. Here is the critical temperature in some unit. Here is 1 over n squared. And in pure Yang meals, this term here disappears because we have no quarks, so the diagrams with one quark on the outside are just not there. So we have a series, it's 1 plus 1 over nc squared. And this is what they find in their plot. That should be a straight line, and it works pretty well. Okay, so it seems that in pure Yang meals, the critical temperature follows the 1 over nc expansion, what you expect from an over nc expansion. You can also do that in QCD and compare the critical temperature for QCD and pure Yang meals, say. And in this calculation here, in the 1 over nc expansion, they should differ by a 1 over nc factor, which is about 30% for three colors. And if you look on the lattice for nc equal to 3 and f equals to 3 for this guy and nc equal to 3 for that guy, that difference is about 35%. So again, it works pretty well. Also, when I have really for QCD, not only pure Yang meals. So what you get is, in the 1 over nc expansion, relations between the different critical temperatures, very typical of what you get in the 1 over nc expansion. You could calculate, if you wanted to know the critical temperature in QCD up to 30% only, you just need to calculate this guy and you're done. That should be enough. So now let's go to non-zero chemical potential. Let's look at the pressure again. The leading order is planar diagrams on the gluons, the next to leading order done by a factor NC with a quark on the outside. The leading order, having only gluons, doesn't know anything about the chemical potential for the quarks, and the chemical potential will enter here because that's the first time the quark appear. Now, as I told you at the beginning, the partition function, the pressure, does not change if I flip both mu and mu d at the same time. P of mu u mu d is the same as P of minus mu u minus mu d, which means that this function here of the chemical potential has to be a function of mu squared. So again, I want to calculate the critical temperature by using the specific heat, just as I did before. And if I do a Taylor expansion, for instance, using this, I find that the critical temperature as a function of baryon chemical potential goes like 1 plus something divided by nc mu squared over t squared. Okay, again, parabola because of this guy here. So I understand this small curvature in the 1 over nc expansion. It's because it's done by a power 1 over nc. So I understand why I get this kind of results on the lattice on the hadron gas model, just because of this simple fact here. Now let's look at baryon chemical potential and isospin chemical potential. What happens here is that the pressure, the first term is the one we know and love, planar diagram with gluons, next leading order done by NC, can be divided in two subsets. Right? Because if I look at a quark going around here, it can never change flavor because the gluons don't mix flavor. So I always have a U quark going around here. So I have a whole subset of this next leading order diagram that contains only the U quark. And I have another subset that contains only the D quark for the same reason. Mixing between flavors will appear later, but not at this order. So what does that mean? It means that this set of diagrams here depends only on mu u, and separately, this set of diagrams depend only on mu d. Now using Cp again, I have that p of mu u mu d is equal to p of minus mu u minus mu d, which means that this guy has to depend only on mu u squared, and this one only on mu d squared. So what do we conclude from this? If we look at the critical temperature looking in the same way as before, we have that Tc mu u mu d is equal to 1 plus 1 over nc, a function that depends on mu u squared only, a function that depends on mu d squared only, plus 1 over nc squared corrections. So if I compare the critical temperature mu u equals mu d or mu equals minus mu d, the difference is 1 over nc squared, 10% for nc equals to 3. So that's why I can understand why the critical temperature either in the hadron gas model or on the lattice are so similar when you look at mu b or mu I.
Was this hold for any value of the quark masses?
What do you mean? If you have very, very heavy quarks, you're going to have basically a decouple. Yeah, sure.
Because because if you have massless quarks,
that's your question.
For isospin, chemical potential increases with the chemical potential, whereas the baryon still goes down.
Okay.
So they're actually
That's absolutely right. So what I've looked at is only when I go from the hadronic phase to the coagulant plasma phase. I do not want to get into the superfluid phase because, as Tom Cohen has pointed out, there's something very strange happening when you enter the superfluid phase. When you enter the superfluid phase, you can think about the susceptibility for Uberg gamma 5, which is basically the pion ones. Okay, there's a pion superfluid, so the susceptibility has to blow up when you get into the superfluid phase. So now let's just replace these two insertions here by a meson propagating here. That means this guy has to dominate because this guy also dominates. And that doesn't follow the large NC counting. So Tom Cohen's point is that in the superfluid phase, I have to change the large NC counting, so I cannot use my arguments here. Okay, so I have to stay really away from the superfluid phase. I don't want to get into the superfluid phase. That's a very good question. So let's look at the critical endpoint now. If I have a first-order phase transition, I have a latent heat, which is just related to this discontinuity of the entropy density. So I remind you what the phase diagram looks like in the mu BT plane. I have this small curvature of the crossover, and it stops, becomes a critical endpoint here. So if I would go at fixed mu b like this, there should be a first order phase transition and a latent heat. Now, since the latent heat is just directly, the entropy density is just related to the pressure, the latent heat should be of order nc squared when I cross this first order phase transition. Let's look at pure Yang mills. In pure Yang mills, if people, Lucini, Tepper, and Wenger again, I've looked at the latent heat divided by nc squared. So it should start as order 1. Plus 1 over nc squared correction, because again, these diagrams, planar diagrams of quark on the outside are not there, so the correction should be nc squared. And here they have the latent heat divided by nc squared as a function of n for 3, 4, and 6. And you see it follows basically what you expect from the 1 over nc expansion. Now, in QCD with fermions, we have to be a little careful. And what I'm going to use is a closest Clapeyron-like relation that relates the latent heat and the discontinuity in the quark anti-quark condensate when I cross the first order phase transition. What you have is that the latent heat, a discontinuity in the pressure or in the entropy basically, is related to this with this factor in front of it, which basically contains the derivative of the critical temperature with respect to the quark masses. Now, if I do the 1 over nc counting of this, the derivative of Tc with respect to the quark mass is of order 1 over nc, for the same reason that the derivative of Tc with respect to mu, the chemical potential, is also 1 over nc. It comes from this next leading order diagram is one quark on the outside. If you look at the quark and the quark condensate at t equal to 0, it comes like nc. Now, if you look on the lattice or in chiral perturbation theory, you'll find that the quark anti-quark condensate basically doesn't vary much to about 140 MeV. It decreases very, very little. It's still more than 90% of its value at t equal to 0. So Q bar Q is basically constant, and therefore over the NC. So if I have a first order phase transition below 140 MeV, I must have that the latent heat as a function of mu and mu d start as NC squared plus 1 over NC, with function that depends on mu u squared and mu d squared, exactly like what we did for the critical temperature before. And if I compare the latent heat when at non-zero mu b and non-zero mu I, they should differ only by 1 over nc squared, 10%. Which leads me to the conclusion that if I have a phase transition below 140 MeV in first order one in the mu bt plane, then I must have one in the mu it plane as well. Very close, because it's 10% away. So let me show you the results, to summarize the results of the 1 over nc expansion. We looked at the critical temperature at zero chemical potential. We saw that between different theories, basically there's 1 over nc corrections between them. If I look at the critical temperature as a function of baryon chemical potential, I find it's a parabola with a small curvature because it's done by a power of 1 over nc. if I look at the critical temperature as function of isospin chemical potential and compare it to the critical temperature as function of baryon chemical potential, they differ only by 1 over nc squared. So they are basically the same. That's why people find that on the lattice, or I found in the hydrogen gas model. And finally, if there is a first-order phase transition below 140 MeV, I can get constraints on the location of the critical endpoint by looking at isospin chemical potential. The advantage is that this guy here can be, you know, simulated using normal Monte Carlo simulations. This one cannot. So maybe from here, maybe from here you can get constraint on where the critical endpoint can be, where you can find the first order phase transition. And again, just before letting you ask you the question, there's a pretty good qualitative agreement between the lattice and the expectation you get from the 1 over NC expansion. Yes, Kim?
The last conclusion is then with the caveat that the baryon superfluid phase does not interfere in the region where you...
Absolutely. I always have to go. I never go from the superfluid phase to the hadron Wernicke phase or whatever.
It would happen if, as in the random matrix model and the NGL model.
Absolutely.
I completely agree.
And
then you can problem.
That's correct. That means that in the superfluid phase, what Kim is referring to is the following thing. Is that if you look at two models we've looked at, random matrix theory and Nambiolo and Asinio, the superfluid phase actually is hiding this critical endpoint. In other words, in the larger, in the 1 over NC expansion, I understand that this guy is too high. So it's hiding. It's above 140 MeV, basically, I believe. So it doesn't appear in these models. Lattice has to tell us if it appears or not, but maybe you're right. Maybe that conclusion of the 1 over NC expansion doesn't lead to anything because the superfluid phase is hiding this point. That's fairly possible. I don't know. You could try to play, increase the quark masses to push that guy to the right, but at the same time, this is going to move. So how does it play together? I don't know. In the random matrix theory, it always disappears. I know that. So let me conclude. What I've tried to convince you of is that these four properties of the critical temperature from the hadronic phase to the quarkon plasma phase, the crossover small curvature as a function of mu, that Tc mu b, Tc mu are about the same, and the critical endpoint can basically be understood in the hadron gas model in the 1 over Nc expansion. Furthermore, the 1 over Nc expansion gives kind of a new perspective, because it gives relation between the phase diagram in the mu b t plane and in the mu I t plane. And this is very useful because here you can do your normal Monte Carlo simulations, and here you cannot, not yet at least. So you can compare and see maybe you get constraints from the mu IT phase diagram and the mu BT phase diagram. Thank you.
Thanks. Questions?
I have a question about this resonance gas model. You said that it's good to about 0.9.
That's Maria has found that on the lattice when she compares that the dependence on the fugacity is well reproduced by the hadron gas model to about 1.95 Tc, and I believe Frithjof has also found something very similar on his calculations.
My question is how bad it is above, because you're talking at basically the really critical region.
Right. Right.
So how bad it is, and shouldn't that be added as some systematic error to...
Maria can answer that better than me, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think the best thing to tell you now in the first level model, the lattice quark mass, then you have some 10-15% deviation from the simplest parameterization of the resonance
gas model. So
at 0.905 Tc.
Yeah, so
temperature has been studied below the critical temperature.
Mm-hmm. And slightly above it breaks.
Slightly above, you cannot do anything anymore, right? The hadron gas model above Tc cannot use anymore, right?
Well, so no, I just to try to understand how well it is using it for studying the critical region and what kind of systematic error that would reproduce, because. You're a priori using something which doesn't know really well about the phase transition.
Correct. But I use another information from outside of it saying where is the phase transition, right? And everything is, you know, nice and...
Yeah, but your system is kind of opposes right behavior and you already know it.
Mm-hmm.
So shouldn't that be somehow added into the systematics? Then maybe.
Oh, if you, I'm not claiming that I make a prediction on the critical temperature that is the better than what the lattice is able to achieve. What I wanted to understand is, since it works till 0.95 of TC, let me just push it a little bit, even though it's not really working above that, and see what you get when you do that. Is it reasonable? Is it not reasonable? Can I understand what people have obtained or not?
But most of your predictions actually are below that temperature, right? Because you get to the critical line at smaller temperatures. So they have this model for his approach has to be guided at lower temperature. This is what he cares about, because he wants to draw the line up to 0.8.
The point is something like this, right? If you look at Q bar Q, for instance, and you look at how it changes with temperature, okay? It's going to do something like this, and then it's going to turn around like that. So in the hydrogen gas model, it's going to go to negative stuff. I don't care. But what I'm looking at is this point here, right? Really what I've done is to look at a band like this that does something like this, and that gives you the range and temperature I find. Okay? So it's basically doing a continuation of what you believe is true up till here, and just continuing that in some sense, okay? It's no more than that.
Chris, another question?
Well, I seem to remember that the latent heat that's determined by Tepper of Virginia is somehow directly gotten from the lattice, from the action group like that. And I thought that you have to, if you really wanted to have the thermodynamical latency, this would have to do some churning.
Right, so that's what they get, the latent heat over nc squared first. Yeah. And then to relate it to the latent heat in physical units, you have to do some work, yes. But that they've done that very, very recently, and I cannot quote any number, but they have done that carefully. Maybe a couple of weeks or months ago, wow. I've seen the paper. This one is a little older, maybe a year or something. Yeah, so recently they have looked at that. They hadn't looked at it before. Okay. It was the first time they did that, that's right.
Any other questions?
So one upshot of your study is if the critical endpoint is at small nu b, as some people you claim or wish, then it should be visible at small nu 1.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Absolutely right.
Conversely, it's not visible as
well. You have to be careful that the temperature cannot be too high. So there's a strong limitation on that, because basically until here is about 140 MeV. But if you look at what's happening here, then this closest Clapeyron relation, it won't tell me anything. It's going to be more the latent. It's maybe other NC. I don't really know.
The 1 over nc expansion explained by nc equals 2 is different.
No. You mean when I go from, the only thing I can do is to look at this. You mean about the order of the phase transition in pure Yang-Mills, right?
Yeah, well, whatever you study, because again, computationally, nc equals 2 is no possibility.
So here, for instance, this, let me turn off the light. If you look at the latent heat here, you see that at 3 it's something, and at 2 it's disappeared, right? So that's a first order here, and it's not a first order anymore afterwards. That's, so they define it like this. So the 1 over its expansion won't tell you that. What it tells you is relation between the different guys. So if you give me that one, I'll tell, okay, maybe something's going to happen.
Is L2 over L0 for that calculation? Is that really order 1?
What's that?
L2 over L0.
Oh, this guy here? Oh, these two guys here?
Yeah.
What do you mean, the ratio?
These two.
Well, it must be, because it's gone negative by the time you NC is 2.
Yeah.
So it means that L2 is even more than.
Yeah. Well, when NC equals 2, then the second term is negative.
So L2 is 4 times L0.
Yeah,
somewhere. It's a big number, so I'm a bit worried, of course, about your numerical arguments, which rely on the fact that the T1 is really order 1. If
right.
T1 is, but order 1 can be 10, and then you're really far off.
That's good.
No, I don't understand your question. If
well, this is why I asked the question, because you have a large N argument where you have a T1 that played a role. If that T1 is
My argument is of course always parametric argument, yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? And but the experience we have at t equals to zero and mu equals to zero in the hedonic phenomenology is that usually when you have a 1/nc correction only, that doesn't go too well. It might be on and off. The 1/nc squared, however, are usually very good. It's I don't think I know an exception on the of something that is calculated as 1/nc.
That's why I asked, because here it looks like
we're
allowed
to
be larger.
Just as that is 4, right? So,
but of course, I agree with your statement. The only problem is it's a bit hard just on the pure gauge loss to get feeling for the order of magnitude of the numbers.
Right, right.
No further questions? Then let's thank Dominique.